This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Brine Field Services Company, Zalandez. Find out more at Zalandez.com. That's Zalandez.com. Hi, it's Joe Lowry. Welcome to another episode of the Global Lithium Podcast. Today is episode 137. My guest is David Guerrero, also known as the Last Samurai of Brine. David is a well-known lithium consultant and advisor after having spent more than a decade in the industry with Lithium One and later Galaxy Resources, where he served as the president of Argentina. He is often sought out by battery companies, OEMs, and other parties interested in investing in lithium resources in South America, of course, with an emphasis on his home country, Argentina. We met over a decade ago. I value David's insights in our relationship very much. We discussed the current status of lithium in Argentina. We talk about geopolitics, the new projects most likely to come into production by 2025 and 2030. We talk about the challenges of operating at 4,000 meters in Argentina, discuss infrastructure issues, the talent issue, and many other topics, including DLE and ESG. Without further ado, David Guerrero. Mr. Guerrero, welcome to the Global Lithium Podcast.
Lori-san, good to be sharing this time together again.
I think most of the old listeners know who the Last Samurai of Brine is. I won't ask you to go through your whole backstory, but if you could give us a little inkling of how you've spent the last decade in lithium, you came out of the Galaxy ranks, and what are you up to now?
Well, it's a little bit more than a decade now, and time flies, doesn't it? So, kind of the short story, post-Galaxy, probably a few of your listeners would associate me still to those times. Pretty interesting times, by the way. Right after we closed that big deal then, it looks small now considering the Rio Tinto one and the CGN3 Quebradas recent ones. But right after that deal with Korean steelmaker POSCO, end of 18, early 19, I left Galaxy and took a well-needed sabbatical year that helped me do a few things that I had pending in my life, sort of middle-age crisis things, I guess. It was all good. And right after that, came back to the Lithium Rodeo, consulting and advising to a few clients that wanted to jump in the lithium sector. A particular one that I like, the group of Canadian investors that I started working with them for developing a project from scratch. That's the Tolizar project and the Canadian company's Alpha Lithium. Doing pretty well for a young company. Lots of potential there. You will probably hear about them again with news in the next months. But anyways, that's the a quick summary of what I've been around and sort of missing having a good catch up with you as well.
Well, I regret I will not be in Catamarca in the coming week for the Panorama Minero. I will be back in Argentina our summer, later in your winter, and look forward to catching up then. But you referred to the Lithium Rodeo, and the Lithium Rodeo is a lot bigger event, and there are a lot more horses involved than there used to be. Let's talk a little bit about how you see the next few years shaking out. We got Cauchari starting up later this year. We have Livent trying to expand. We have
Alchem expanding. Your old project is trying to move forward. Rio Tinto's in the game. You referred to the Zijin acquisition of 3Qs. There's a lot going on. And it used to be when you came to Argentina, it was to see Hombre Muerto. What's your perspective on, if you looked at 2025, who's going to get into production by then?
Indeed, quite a bit of action these days. Very hot market. Many players from different nationalities, even, and of course, developing projects in a tough jurisdiction. You know, for its remoteness, for its challenges with certain infrastructure. Personally, out of the list of projects and companies you've mentioned, I see by 2025 probably Eramet, a French company with Centenario Solar happening. I also see our good friends in POSCO happening in the northern portion of Hombre Muerto. Of course, I'm discounting that very short term. Ganfeng and Lithium Americas will have that pretty interesting operation in Jujuy happening as a productive entity. To be honest with you, I don't see a lot more. I will probably give some 50% chances to Mariana. Again, a fairly remote project with some infrastructure challenges, but big name behind Ganfeng. So let's see. I honestly don't know about that one. And more than that is difficult. Permitting, planning, and starting execution will burn easily years. It's not something that happens overnight, despite many people believe that it's easier. There's a few challenges to face, and I'm not sure all the projects are equipped for that. You know, the permitting is burning quite a bit of time these days, and because there's a bigger universe of projects, and there's probably the same people dealing with evaluating those projects. So that on itself will create a bit of a delay on obtaining the permits. And then One thing that is already happening is shortage of human resources. People that not only involved with the mining sector, but hopefully with some experience in the lithium game too, that we're starting to see as well.
Well, if you don't see a Neolithium online in the next 3 years, do you see it happening at all? And I guess I would throw in the name Lake Resources. A lot of podcast listeners are hopeful there. And then one final thing, because if I don't mention them, I'll get a lot of hate mail, but Argosy keeps talking about this tiny production they're bringing on. And what's your perspective on that? I mean, anybody who can produce lithium chemicals right now is certainly going to be able to sell it at an attractive price. But how meaningful do you think that is?
Well, on one hand, I think you kind of need those haters, don't you? But yeah.
I cultivate them.
You do, in fact. There's a handful of projects that will require additional efforts, not just from the operational side of things, but also from a CapEx side, to invest in infrastructure that is not yet there. And initially, I mentioned Mariana. Some of the projects in Catamarca will face the same challenges. So I'm not saying this would not happen, but that's additional time, basically. And we all end up measuring these from a time perspective, because that counts a lot when we're thinking what product is going to be ready in 25, what product is going to be ready in 26, 27, and so on. That's why none of the projects you mentioned would be in my imaginary list. before, say, 5 years at least.
That's a really interesting point, because we've heard the rhetoric out of both the government side and just people that like to write about the industry that Argentina will come up with a very large number quite quickly. And honestly, it's been stuck below 40,000 tons since Olaroz started and added as a second producer to the historical FMC lithium / Livent. So we're really looking at a world that demand is going to grow probably as much this year as the entire lithium market was in 2015, maybe 2016. But how long is it going to take Argentina? So Cauchari starts this year, and maybe it's a 1 to 2 year ramp up to their full capacity. Then you're already in late 23, early 24. You're still well below 100,000 tons in Argentina. So when is this massive increase in production going to be able to happen? And then we'll talk about the barriers to it happening.
Yes, it's a very interesting point. Many people would probably hate me for throwing these long-term numbers, you know, the 5 years I mentioned before. But one thing I need to mention, though, is on the other hand, and from a positive perspective, what's happening these days, because lithium is attracting so much attention, is that this has lined up the efforts of the national government in Argentina along with the provincial governments. So the hot market, the hot lithium market, is facilitating this situation where governments are having more frequent discussions, and don't be surprised if policies get a little bit more flexible, even, you know, for investment. We've heard a couple of examples apply to mining investment in excess of certain threshold. Lithium these days is creating that opportunity, I think. So I do see that happening from a positive perspective. So the time factor on one hand, but hopefully the government's helping a little bit on the other hand. I still see certain difficulties, and I don't see another wave of producers before those 5 years. So I'm thinking between 5 to 7 years from now, we'll probably see, just as we've seen before, the price waves, a wave of new producers coming online post five to seven years. That's my reading of the situation.
Well, anybody that listens to the podcast knows I'm very pro Argentina. I think it's critical to the future of the lithium industry and the energy transition, but we have to deal with the reality. And I think you've brought up a couple of great points, and I'd like to drill down a little bit more into the, it's a tough jurisdiction just because you're at 4,000 meters. Everything's a little different at 4,000 meters, whether it's breathing or baking bread. And if you look at just the logistics difficulties, all these projects, is the drilling equipment there in adequate numbers and the people to execute drilling programs? If we start at some basic level like that, is that the problem? Because to me, we don't have as big an issue with financing now because of lithium pricing, and because it's very obvious now that the demand is going to be there. Whereas if we had this discussion 3 years ago, it was still a question mark.
Another good point there you brought. Drilling equipment is scarce these days, and because of this renewed hype, there's also a handful of new projects that probably in the past didn't look that promising, but by virtue of a few technologies, some of them not tested yet, a new handful of projects have showed up. Of course, every single one of them wants to drill, and they do need to drill to define resources, of course. So that is also happening. So it's not just human resources shortage, it's also material shortage, particularly in this case, talking about drilling equipment. So it should be solved, and I'm sure it will be solved. But again, time factor kicks in. Probably we need to bring some extra equipment from neighbor countries if needed. And one of the other challenges I see, you and I have discussed many projects along these years, and we never talked about lithium being a big problem as a mineral resource in Argentina. On the contrary, it pretty much flows in every salar you start exploring. One big challenge many projects will start facing is the other elements that you need to develop project. This I kept repeating in pretty much every forum I have the opportunity to share these comments or even a vision. And for instance, fresh water is a key one. You cannot have a project if you don't have fresh water. And I'm not saying because projects use lots of fresh water, it's just because projects need a critical element is fresh water. So you may have a beautiful lithium resource, but if you don't have fresh water, you have a problem. The other elements, infrastructure, as we discussed and mentioned before, different sources of energy, you can potentially sort them out with sufficient CapEx, right? And at the right price, I'm sure that CapEx will show up. But if nature doesn't want to give you that critical element, fresh water is, then indeed you have a problem in that project. That's a quick reading in regards of the other aspects to cover project development and not just the financing side of things, right?
Well, let's put that in the context of Hombre Muerto. You got Livent. They want to do a two-phase expansion in the next year or so, going from low 20s to 30 and then to 40,000 tons in rough numbers. You got POSCO wanting their project. You have Sol de Vida. If you have all the capital and you have all the people, can those projects all coexist at the rates the specific owners want with, one, the fresh water that you have available, and two, the availability of natural gas?
You love pushing the limits, don't you? You know, I'm very familiar with Hombre Muerto particularly. Hombre Muerto has a really good thing. Fresh water is not a problem for them. So that box could be ticked. And that's a big one, to be honest. The next item there, much needed energy. And this, of course, varies depending on what technology each one of these future productive entities choose, because there'll be a direct impact to not just freshwater consumption, but also energy consumption. So gas is a scarce resource at the Puna. And there's a few projects that have been advancing, probably not as fast as the in the mining industry need to expand the capacity, the transportation capacity to take more gas to different points, not just Hombre Muerto. And that goes hand in hand to have efficient calories to burn at the end of those gas pipelines. The potential replacement is renewable energies, but of course, and here we go back again to the time factor, permitting stages and creating those solar farms. We have a very good example in the Olacapato area with two very interesting, very sizable solar farms. One of them being used to satisfy part of the electrical needs Lithium Americas and Ganfeng have at the Cauchari project. But is it there yet? In my mind, talking back about Hombre Muerto and the surrounding, is the energy available today? No, it's not. So that is going to be a challenge for sure. Hopefully, at least one of those advanced projects for taking a much larger gas pipeline to the area happens in the next 24 months. That will definitely be a solution. Otherwise, I think everyone is already thinking about these alternatives with solar as a plan B.
Is it a federal government role, or is it a provincial government role, or does it require outside investment to move that forward, assuming the government makes sure there's not a permitting delay?
Yeah, for the existing Puna gas pipeline, it was 100%. It was a 100% government initiative back in the day, and it was a very smart one. But pretty soon, the capacity was exceeded. So I do believe today there's sufficient incentives for private companies to do an alternative, much larger gas pipeline. There were conversations with some French companies that, of course, were aiming to satisfy the needs of Eramet's project. Honestly, I don't know how far they are these days, if that initiative is still alive or we just lost it. There's another one also financed by private capitals to take a fairly large gas pipeline down all the way to Hombre Muerto too. And I believe that is a joint initiative funded by private capitals, but technically operated by the same operator that manages the Puna gas pipeline these days, which is REMSA.
I wanted to ask you about the outsider's view. And when I say outsiders, I'm really talking about the global press that likes to write about China dominating the lithium world, which I have always taken issue with. But they also say that recently China's dominating what's happening in Argentina. My perspective is that, yes, China's a player. Ganfeng, obviously, is a player. Zijin's a player. but Livent's a U.S. company. Allkem's an Australian company. Rio Tinto's obviously not Chinese. It seems to me that there's a good global mix of players from the outsiders that are involved. But how do you, as a local, how do you view it?
I would agree with you. I think there's a very interesting combination of nationalities today with control over lithium assets. Chinese, we have to recognize, were aggressive enough to secure key projects probably earlier, before these I don't want to call it a bubble, but these hot market we have these days. In any case, just acquiring a project doesn't mean you're going to be in production in the next couple of years. And then again, people may hate me for saying that out loud, but when you acquire a project, many companies will take the time to review engineering and you know, retest if the resource is there, for how long it'll sustain production, at what production rate. That's the number of factors that the buyer of an existing resource asset will want to double check before advancing to construction. No one will go blind building a 30,000 tons lithium carbonate plant a year without being 100% sure that they've got sufficient resources to project that over the desired mine life. What I mean by this is, buying one asset is only the first step. You know, the hard work just begun for you if you just acquired it.
Well, I think that Rio Tinto's recent podcast appearance 100% backs up what you just said. They've put a lot of capital in the first phase of their lithium development, but they weren't making bold predictions about having 100,000 tons anytime soon, as some others may have done. So I think when one of the world's biggest mining companies takes a step back and realizes it's going to be a step-by-step process to get into significant lithium production, then maybe people ought to pay attention to that. What I would like to do now, though, is since we framed 2025 as probably not getting over 100,000 tons plus or minus, no matter what happens, what about, go 8 years out, what about 2030? And what do you think Argentina's ability to demand now is seen as being over 2 million tons in 2030, but it's very hard to get to a supply number that's anywhere close to that, you know, taking the Atacama, taking everything Australia can do and be converted in China or locally. And a lot of people see, and I'm one of those, that Argentina has a critical role, but can Argentina get to 300,000 tons, or is it going to be less than that even in 2030, and you have to go out to 2035 to really get to the full impact Argentina can have? What say you, Last Samurai of Brine?
I do see more results for 2030. I'm more optimistic about that mid to long term compared to the predictions or potential predictions we could have for 2025. Argentina's got a big challenge. You and I have discussed about, you know, comparisons against Chile and their own projections to sustain production over the next decade or the future. And Chile is a more mature country in terms of its mining history, and Argentina still walking that path. You know, Salta province just had its first gold project, metal project in the past couple of years that they started production. So it's Argentina is in that path of growing, starting the walk to become a mining producer. Lithium is helping again. I will be coherent with my previous statements in that sense. And for 2030, the challenge is that Argentina keeps the rules as is now. So companies investing in the country will be not just comfortable, but also could project the results, could project their execution in constructing plants, having the understanding that the rules are not going to change. So that's, as I see it, the challenge Argentina has. If that stays as is today, I think by 2030, there's good possibilities, very good possibilities that Argentina becomes the largest producer of lithium chemicals, brine-based.
I want to thank Zelandes for sponsoring this episode. Zelandes is enabling lithium projects to get to market faster, more efficiently, and with lower costs. More lithium sooner means the energy transition happens faster. Find out more at Zelandes.com. Let's talk about a potential way to speed. Well, two, we'll deal with them separately. Potential way to speed up at least lithium carbonate equivalents being exported from Argentina. And the first way would be if we already have one producer, as I understand it, exporting brine to China. And it seems to me that this may fit in with getting around some of the infrastructure issues, is just developing a pond system and initially producing a brine that can be exported for processing elsewhere. How realistic do you feel the government will allow that more broadly than the mindset has been in the past? And do you see that as just another route of, will steal Chris Reed's term, liquid spodumene going to China? That would be lithium chloride brine. Or do you see that as a short-term thing that would be allowed just to help the world get over the lithium shortage, but ultimately the government's going to want lithium chemicals exported. So is it a complementary strategy, or is it just a short-term stopgap?
I like the liquid spodumene concept by the way. I do believe at current prices, measured in terms of LCE, lithium chloride in the form of a concentrated brine could be a tool for helping certain projects develop faster. I'm sure government officials will have their own way of looking at this. We had conversations and even discussions about this in the past. Many people totally reject the idea. I believe the price tag is the answer, you know? So at what price you could export that material, because that material is going to be paying royalties, it's going to be creating jobs, it's going to be mobilizing the economy. So, and particularly the lithium economy that we're so interested in. I'm in favor of that. Call it an intermediate solution as a strategy. So something that could last for a period of time, helping projects advance. We all know, most of your listeners will, the quantums for building a lithium carbonate plant or a lithium hydroxide plant. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars needed. And even considering we could secure the financing, as we discussed before, we know there's other challenges associated. So it's not just having the cash and the place where to build a plant. So I believe if there's an agreement between the industry and policy, government policymakers, regulators, there could be this this intermediate step where liquid spodumene, aka brine from the Andean range in Argentina, could be exported to other places where it could be converted to lithium chemicals.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting interim solution now, especially if you look at in the past when it was done from Chile to China, the value was very low. If you look at what's happened with spodumene pricing in Australia, it's grown significantly. So if you put a reasonable price on the chloride, the country is going to benefit significantly just on a royalty basis. And ultimately, if they gave somebody a 5-year waiver and say you can export brine for 5 years, but at the end of that 5 years, it's got to be lithium chemicals or you have to stop. I don't know. That seems like a reasonable compromise to me. But given all the issues with so many projects and the logjam of between having the adequate capital equipment, not capital, but the being able to bring in the equipment or build the equipment, it's just going to be a much better scenario if there's chemical development and the liquid form. At least that would be my recommendation, but no, nobody asked me. Talking about royalties, if you look at your neighbor across the Andes, their royalty structure for the Atacama is significantly different than the royalty structure in Argentina. Given the current understanding now with the government that lithium's from Argentina is crucial, the investment's going to get made, do you see Argentina tinkering with either the royalty structure or in some other way coming up with a mechanism to take more for the country?
Yeah, initially I would stick to my previous statement where I believe Argentina shouldn't be touching much any of the existing legal and political framework. That said, we know for a fact the national government is working along the lines with YPF for YPF to get involved like actively involved in the lithium game. We don't know yet how. I think there's some consistent opportunities, but something that requires quite a bit of interaction between the public sector and the private sector. The provinces, on the other hand, with their own provincial mining companies, have had the opportunity to also interact with the industry. We have the GEMSA case with the Oro Cobre participation, REMS as well in Salta, and Cañen in Caramarca are doing or having their own initiatives on how to participate in the mining game, and more specifically with some lithium projects. So there is a bit of that already happening. I would say in a way that is not affecting previsibility, that in a way that is not affecting credibility or touching the legal framework, that is when people start feeling not so comfortable in investing in a country like Argentina. So rephrasing my previous statement, leave things as they are and fix what's not broken. And I believe we have some projection there.
You meet with a lot of people from around the world that come to look at lithium assets in the country. What would you rank then, after having this discussion, what would you say are the top three concerns about operating in Argentina?
Ah, asking an Argentine, eh? I believe a lot of things have improved since the early days when at least as far as I remember, the mining history started in Argentina. My biggest concern as an operator, as someone that actually works in these remote areas, continues to be infrastructure. So that's, I remember discussions with colleagues, some of them that are no longer with us, decades ago, and those discussions are still the same today. We have some very good examples on how infrastructure helps. We mentioned the Puna gas pipeline before, and that's a great example, you know, improving the quality of roads. Jujuy has a good example of that. Gas pipelines that could make projects feasible, just as we also mentioned for a few of them that would require energy. So I'll probably summarize: the biggest challenge is infrastructure in its all forms.
And I couldn't have this podcast. I got a couple of DMs last night since I tweeted that I was going to talk to you. People wanted me to ask about your thoughts on where Argentina stands versus other jurisdictions from an ESG standpoint. Tell me about any discussions you have or any thoughts you have on when OEMs are looking at sourcing, where Argentina falls into the ESG.
I see that we're still in the early days, and these will connect to having or not having basically sufficient infrastructure in certain locations. Then you're forced to satisfy your energy needs with fossil fuels at some point. Of course, that has a straight impact on your carbon footprint. There's a number of initiatives that people in this sector are discussing for instance, thermal energy based on solar power. A number of challenges to still deal with. The good thing, if I have to be positive about it, is that the discussions are on the table already. And as you well said, many OEMs will require producers to fall under certain standards to define clearly what's their carbon footprint and see if it makes sense. You know, of course, there's a lot of marketing lines about net zero or you know, just trying to find the perfect balance. Not just in Argentina, but I do see we're still not there in the lithium industry. And it's a big challenge all of us that are involved in the sector will be facing in the next years, because I'm 100% sure most of the OEMs, most of the end users will demand higher and higher attention to ESG, and it'll force productive entities to go cleaner and cleaner. Solar in the Puna particularly is a great opportunity, but not the only one. So I do believe there's a lot more work to do there.
And the final question before rapid fire, how important, given some of the solars in Argentina are not as amenable to ponds from an evaporation standpoint, some of the resources could use DLE to make them economically viable. How important do you feel DLE is to fully exploiting Argentina's lithium resources? And what do you think is a reasonable time frame for having something that's true DLE, not the hybrid that Livent operates now?
Well, very, very good point. Very good question as well. I do see DLE as being an opportunity to develop certain assets that otherwise would have been probably would have never seen the light as potential productive entities. But the thing with DLE, and before I say this, we are starting to see more larger scale pilot plans for now, testing different DLE technologies. That is something that I'm happy to start seeing, because as you may have heard, initially DLE was perceived as something like a sort of a magical solution, something happening in a black box where people didn't really understand what was coming in and what was happening there. The technologies, the different alternatives and technologies related to DLE have evolved. And I was telling you, I'm happy to see that some of those are starting to see these pilot plants where this magic is starting to show us more of a reality. The opportunity is there. There's no magic solutions. There's no perfect solutions as well. Whenever I talk about DLE, I try to depict the solution as a machine that has many levers. So using DLE, and you probably heard from these from me before, but one of the levers that you could activate is the fresh water consumption. Another lever is reagents. Another lever is energy. And then the final one, that's not entirely connected to the technology, but to the location of the project, is distances, logistics, you know, that all of them will impact in the cost. But basically the first three could be all three together, just one or a combination of them. It's never an easy or perfect solution. That's my point. So using DLE does help make a few projects viable, but it comes at a cost, either from natural resources like freshwater or OPEX.
All right. Well, thank you for an interesting discussion. Let's go to our little rapid fire. You mentioned your sabbatical. As I have heard from you and actually for some other people, you had a very interesting piloting experience flying from, where was it, South Africa to North America. Tell me what your top three experiences, scary or not, were during that trip.
Yeah, that was indeed a pretty crazy adventure. We had a couple of close calls. One was in Kenya, and where we basically lost both engines, but we were able to recover one and we were able to land. So as a scary experience and a close call, that ranks first. Second one was no visibility approach to a rainy, stormy airstrip in the north portion of the UK. So, as you know, weather is could get very interesting in those in that part of the world. We lost instruments there with no visibility, so not a great combination. As you can tell, we made it. So, but that was a very scary moment too. Well, the happiness of finally arriving to destination when we were approaching Fort Lauderdale after crossing the North Sea and getting to Greenland and Iceland. It was because it's just a small aircraft for your listeners to understand. It's not just a regular ocean crossing. We had to pretty much jump short distances all the way to the north before starting heading south into North America. That sensation of happiness was priceless. And I'm glad I did it. It was a pretty amazing adventure. And I think it was the right time for me to do it.
David Guerrero, thank you very much. I look forward to catching up with you in Argentina in the next few months, but this was a good surrogate until we're able to do that.
Well, again, great. Enjoying a good discussion, Joe, and look forward to see you. And there's more of that wine you like here waiting for you.
All right. Take care.
I say it often. I don't give investing advice on this podcast. However, if you listen to that episode carefully, a lot of the information should help you look at projects and potential investments in a different light than maybe you've looked at them in the past. I'm a big fan of Argentina, and I believe Argentina ultimately will become the largest jurisdiction of brine lithium production, but it's not going to happen overnight. Argentina has a great diversity of projects. They run the gambit. On one hand, you have a new project, Cauchari or Minera XR, the Ganfeng Lithium Americas JV, that is almost ready to go into startup. If you look at the drone shots that LAC puts online on a monthly basis, you can clearly see that. That's one extreme. A major and an advanced lithium developer working together, they'll go into production. They'll still have some startup hiccups. But that, from my perspective, is the best case of a new lithium project in Argentina. You also have an experienced global mining company like Rio Tinto now getting in to the lithium world with a new project. They have more to prove. It's an early stage project. It's going to need direct lithium extraction technology to fully unlock that resource. But as you heard recently on the podcast, Rio Tinto is taking a methodical approach, allowing themselves a lot of time. And at the other extreme, you have newcomers that are trying to bring a Silicon Valley vibe to lithium, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when they claim that they're going to be a top four producer, maybe going to 100,000 tons in a pretty rapid fashion, that's a case where I say, let's just take a step back. Time will tell. If you're an investor, proceed with caution. If you're a trader, you may have done great. But if you're planning on holding an asset that has a lot of hype associated with it for the long term. And when we talk about the existing producers in Argentina, that's a short list. Livent and Allkem both have expansion projects underway. I think you will see in the next 6 to 9 months, Livent announced that they aren't going to be on time with their revised timetable for that expansion, but we'll see. Allkem, I am hoping, is able to bring on the new capacity with improved quality and recovery and to the AllChem people, this is an open invitation to come on the podcast if you'd like to talk about your project. I have invited LiveVent on as well, but LiveVent continues to kind of dance around whether they'll participate or not. And if they do come on, we'll certainly be asking them about their transfer pricing policy, which has recently come under audit scrutiny by the relevant officials in the province of Catamarca. And finally, to my friends at Panorama Mineiro, I hope you have a great lithium event in the coming week. I wish I would be there to speak again, as I've done the last four times, two live, two remote because of COVID. I do plan to be there next year. I believe the event will be in Salta. It is certainly one of my favorites. I have already made my travel plans and reservations. I will be participating in the Fast Markets event in Phoenix. And with that in mind, I am going to record an episode of the podcast next week with Peter Hanna, who is an analyst at Fast Markets, and I think one of the rising stars from a commentary perspective. So look for that. This weekend is Memorial Day in the United States, where we remember those who died in the service of our country. Although the intent of the holiday is as a memorial to those who died in service, I like to say thank you to anyone that served, and I would also broaden that out to say thank you to any listener in any country of the 145 that have podcast downloads. If you served or you're a first responder, thank you for your service. That would include people like my wife, Connie, who was a captain in the U.S. Army before I met her. Thanks again for listening.